This is Comedy Potpourri. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And today we're on our third episode of Star Trek episodes.
Correct. Of our personal favorites.
Yes.
I always have to, I guess we really have to make that a delineation on that, because there are a lot of top 10 lists that are out there, depending on which site you go to or podcast.
Right.
They'll always give you a list of some of the best episodes, what they call the best of the best.
Actually, some of the ones we picked are on that list.
Fall into that little situation as well. But we have our own personal favorites. Now, we've already covered the Doomsday Machine. We've talked about, I think, one of Paul's favorite episodes, which is Space Seed.
Yes. Well, we haven't done that one yet.
Yeah, we did.
We did.
Because we talked about how it segued into the movie and how the motion picture made enough money to make Paramount want to continue on with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So. It was.
It's all good.
Multibun.
But the thing is about those couple of early episodes, because one of the first ones I started off with was the pilot, right? Not the cage. We talked about the first one with Shatner in it.
Right.
And then we talked about the Balance of Terror with the first introduction of the Romulans.
Oh, yeah.
Romulans actually showed up long before the Klingons did, which I thought was kind of interesting.
It is very interesting. And one of the things that we talked about, too, if you guys look at that episode, their bird of prey is actually the Klingons.
Correct. And there's a story behind that, believe it or not.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so the story goes is that the Klingon bird of prey, initially, when they introduced the Klingons, originally the script had actually had Romulans written into the script.
Oh.
So they were going to use Romulans for the... It was for the search for Spock. Okay. And so in that original treatment, the movie that Leonard Nimoy... His first directorial debut was on Star Trek III. He was directing himself as well as the rest of the cast. And this is after the advent of all the stuff that Nicholas Meyer had done for the second movie, for The Wrath of Khan.
Right.
And this is a good follow-up. Of course, initially, there was a lot of talk that Leonard Nimoy had wanted to end his career with Spock. He wanted to get rid of the character. And they wrote into the script that Spock was going to die, which he does. Okay. But... as they were looking at it, the test audience was reacting in such a way, and Leonard Nimoy, I think he realized after watching the screenings that it's like, this is a great swan song for this character, but he wanted to continue on. And sure enough, they did a couple of what they call pickups.
Right.
And he was able to come back in later on at the very tail end with that whole thing, Remember... And that's where he touches Dr. McCoy.
Yeah.
Well, that's where he transfers his Katra as Sarek and Kirk go through the mind meld.
Right.
And Sarek realizes that the Katra's not in Kirk to rejoin the rest of the Vulcan in its spirituality.
Right.
And as it turns out, the only person he was able to touch was McCoy. Now, McCoy's always been that, as far as like stuff goes on between the two characters, the friendship between McCoy and Spock is always...
love-hate relationship?
That's exactly what it is. It's like if you took Alice and Raph Crandon and you stuck them in the Star Trek universe, to the moon! And Ralph would be McCoy and Spock would be Alice.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think... the Honeymooners in Space, Phase 2.
So anyway, we're going to start with our first one, A piece of the action.
Now, for most of you folks out there, this will be known as the gangster episode. At the time, there was a lot of stuff going around that, like, the gangster planet or the Nazi planet or something like that that they would talk about, or the Roman planet.
Right.
Okay. And there is some stuff behind that. But in this particular instance, the way this episode is pitched is initially before the forming of the Federation, there are starships in this coalition of planets is what they called it initially in Enterprise, because it takes place prior to the formation of the Federation.
It was 15 years?
What's that?
Was it 15 years or 20 years or something like that?
No, it's 100 years.
Oh, it's 100 years. Okay.
Because of the way stellar travel at that time, the Enterprise can travel comfortably at warp 5. It can travel normally at warp 6 without any kind of issue whatsoever. But 100 years prior to that, which is when you're getting into the actual series of Enterprise, ships could only travel like warp 4 or warp 5 tops.
Yeah.
Apparently, there was a crew called the USS Horizon, lost in space somehow, but they had visited this planet called Iosha 3 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
And had inadvertently, the Prime Directive wasn't even in place at this time. So this is the reason why this is a big deal.
Right, right.
Because if you take a look at the writing credits, Gene L. Kuhn is a co-writer on this, and he's the one who actually came up with the idea of the Prime Directive, if you remember me talking about that.
Which is that they are not to interfere with the planet or its evolution or anything.
Natural evolution. It has been proven, actually, the Vulcans had actually kind of really impressed us when they made the formation of the Federation, is that any time that a more technically advanced race comes into play, they're always looked upon as gods. That's a perception. And there's a amount of outside infection, I think, to the planet's natural way of going forward with their natural evolution.
Instead of following their natural timeline,
It
changes the timeline.
And in this particular episode, this ship had left a couple technical manuals on how to build some stuff from the 20th century's point of view. And a book, the book.
Which is built, it was written in, was it
1990,
yeah.
It's a hardbound, thick freaking book tome about the mobsters of the 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
James Cagney would have loved this place.
Yeah.
They'll show you. I'm going to rub you out. Anyway, so this is a great take. Is like, so you have a planet. As we find out that the source of the infection is this one book.
One book, yeah.
So it's basically saying that anything that the Federation or any Federation world that goes to another planet that is not incorporated into space travel, according to the way that the laws go for warp-capable societies, is the way that the Federation reaches out to these planets. Because the moment that these planets start to go out into deep space, they're going to realize their planet is not the center of their universe anymore. And, I mean, that's a great, great indication. It's like, if you were going out into space and suddenly you come across a bunch of space aliens and stuff like that, you're going to realize that all of your conceptual ideas of your version of God and your religion that may be based around that god or gods, if there's a pantheon there, you are no longer the center of the universe. You're only part of a larger ecosystem.
Which is Earth 150 years ago or 200 years
ago.
And
I think that's the reason why that Trek kind of went with that whole scenario. And I think Gene L. Kuhn did a great job in incorporating that into Trek.
There's so many things that were subtly added into Star Trek.
That, oh, yeah.
That you have to, instead of just look at entertainment first and then go back and going,
Now, I think we've mentioned before that the reason why Trek worked really well, and predecessors like that, like either the Outer Limits or the Twilight Zone.
Right.
Rod Serling and then Joseph Stefanos, who worked on the Outer Limits, and Leslie, not Nielsen. But another Leslie that I know about. The idea is that science fiction was able to circumvent a lot of any of the social commentary that was being talked about during the 1960s, because the United States was all about, we're going to win this war. We're going to win the war on communism, and we're going to win the war against Vietnam.
Right.
And so on like that. But you couldn't say it because it was inflammatory for some weird reason. The censors at that time said they probably had a listing of things that you could and could not say. And if it was inflammatory to the U.S. government at the time, then you would get fined or thrown in jail.
Or blacklisted.
Yep. That, and which was very prevalent.
In the 60s.
In 50s. 1950s.
50, oh, yeah, 50s. But most in the... but Nixon did it. Nixon had a big blacklist.
Is it a holdover? Or a,
I don't know. Well, no, because it was during the war, the Vietnam War and stuff.
Even though he wasn't necessarily the one.
Yeah.
I guess he was very much at the time... You know, sorry, we're talking about politics a little bit here. But Nixon was a... He was a proponent of anti-communist kind of things during the 1950s and for Eisenhower as his vice president.
Yeah.
Right? It was Eisenhower, right? And then when it came time for the presidency to come up between him and Kennedy, Nixon actually had a better reception to what he was saying, but the way he was perceived on television made it look like Kennedy had actually won the dialogue going back and forth between the two of them. And he was a very, let's face facts, Jack was a very charismatic individual.
Oh, yeah. He's, oh, yeah.
And that's the reason why the public went with him.
Right, right. I'm not a crook. Yeah,
Kennedy won the popular vote.
Oh, yeah, he did. And then they called the White House Camelot.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And, I mean, Kennedys had already been doing a lot of stuff with his father, Joe Kennedy.
Right. Who tried to get brother first, and his brother didn't work out, so it was Jack.
Mm-hmm.
So also, so the people blacklisted was like the Smothers Brothers, a lot of people on TV. They lost their contracts, so there was nowhere contracts for these television shows.
Yeah. So you had a number of different people who were constantly making comments, but they couldn't do it. But if you wanted to have an actual real long dialogue about what was going on at the time, if you put it in the veil of science fiction, because that's just a kid's show.
Right, right.
Because that's the way it was perceived. If you had a kid's show, you had just ships being hung on like strings and just kind of being hung in front of a camera and stuff
right.
like that. And even though they were like Voyager and stuff like Tom Corbett and the Space Rangers or something like that, or Captain Video. I mean, it was a kid's show. To a lot of censors, and that was their perception. But serious science fiction writers realize, no, this series could actually go farther and certainly prove that point.
Which brings us to back to where we're at now, a piece of the action. So what happens is that when they get hold of that book, the whole this world is based off of gangsters and whatever, you know, who had this section of town or this section of the planet,
the bosses,
or whatever.
The bosses, as they call them,
in
different sections or territories. You got Bellaxmix and Krakow.
Jojo
Krakow. Jojo Krakow.
It's a clown. It sounds like a clown.
I know, right? But this is where the best line of my younger brother, he's not as big a Trekkie as I am. And that's okay, but he has a couple favorite lines, and the one of the ones that comes up later in the episode is like, "Cover him, Spocko."
Spocko, yes. Cover him, Spocko.
I'd advise you, Zoskmix, to keep dialing. And hearing Leonard Nimoy as dressed up as Spock in a gangster costume was freaking hilarious.
Oh, it was funny. Yeah, what's with the ears?
With the ears, yeah. Mr. Krakow. Anyway, so
it's a hit. All right. What has happened? It's a hit.
So the Horizon has been lost. They had sent out a distress signal that was picked up only a couple days ago, according to the Enterprise.
Right.
But it had been 100 years. Again, talking time dilation and warp factors. That's the thing. But Kirk couldn't really get into it. But that's okay, because it made sense in the whole grand scheme
of
things.
So can I explain this? So a radio wave sent how many light years away is still going.
Yeah.
It hasn't stopped. So this is what happened. It was going for almost 100 years, and then finally they pick it up. And it was on the old type of broadcast that the old ships used to use.
Right. And so, but the Enterprise had just picked it up. They went there. 100 years worth of infection of this book.
Right.
And so Prime Directive wasn't in place. So now they were going to, Enterprise was going to see how severe this change was prior to the Prime Directive. And they realized as soon as Kirk, Bones, and Spock materialize on the planet, they realize, oh, it's severe, incredibly severe. Because all these guys are putting hits on each other with like submachine guns and Tommy guns and stuff like that. I think the moment that probably less than a minute by the time that Kirk, Spock, and McCoy materialize in the street before they get hit by a car, and to get out of the way, by these flivvers, I think is what they were called.
Yeah.
So got your gangster cars rolling around, stuff like that. There's a hit on Bella Oxmix's guys in his territory, and his two guys who were the greeting party totally take charge of all this stuff. It's like, yeah, boss, they got these heaters on them and stuff. A heater? What do you mean? A phaser, a gun of some kind, some sort of a weapon. And of course, Kirk tries to say, put that down. You'd blow out an entire wall of it.
Yeah, half the building, yeah.
And actually, that actually comes up a lot of time because these small devices, much like this communicator. So if you have something like that, it's gonna cause a major problem if you start messing around with this stuff, right? So Bella Oxmix, his biggest idea is to have these guys come down with a bunch of fancy heaters and some troops to show how to use them and take charge of the entire planet.
Right.
He knows the planet itself is in the process of devolving into absolute chaos. And it's because there's no centralized kind of governing policies or anything like that.
And Kirk sees that too.
And Kirk sees it, and he agrees with it. But the methods that these guys use, because they're gangsters oriented, and it's, let's be honest, it's a very comical way of the gangsters are being portrayed on screen.
Yeah.
It's nowhere close to The Godfather.
JoJo hit me, so we're going to hit JoJo. We're going to take him out.
I hit Krakow. Krakow hits Temple. Temple hits me. Nobody can get anything done. All right. No worries. We'll get into that.
And so as it goes, throw them into a hole. Oh, put them on ice.
Yeah, put them on ice.
Put them on ice.
So they take charge of it, and Bella Oxmix gets a hold of the communicator and starts talking to the ship and is talking to Scotty. And Scotty's just trying to make sense of what they're talking about. It's like, what?
Heaters?
Yeah, I got...
What?
I got your captain and his friends on ice. You mean you have our captain? And it's like, yeah, what do you think there, dummy? I mean, it's like, that's the way the gangsters are talking to him and stuff like that. It's like, I need you guys to send me down a bunch of these fancy heaters and stuff like that. And the communication's cut off by Oxmix, and Scotty turns to the science officer at the time sitting in, said, find out what a heater is, which I thought was kind of hilarious. But then they start realizing what that's all about. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy realize that they have to try to correct this situation because they put this society on a crash course because of their interference, and this book is set to make it's terrible for these people.
Yeah,
they're gonna end up in absolute anarchy, and everybody's gonna start shooting each other with a Tommy gun and stuff like that because they've based their entire governing society on gangsters.
Even the women carried guns, and they were like, they weren't sitting back; they were rough.
Yeah, they were rough.
Yeah. And then the kids were rough.
Oh, yeah. That kid. That kid's pretty hilarious, actually.
What do I get out of it? Yeah. What do you want?
What do you call? You call me a babe?
A babe? Yeah.
I'm calling you a babe, but nothing personal.
What do you want out of this? I want a piece of the action.
Well, he didn't quite say it like that, but
no,
he's holding a switchblade to Kirk. He's like, I'm calling you a babe, but you know, there's nothing personal. So what do you have? I think I could cut myself in for a thick percentage. Yes. Otherwise, you wouldn't be putting a hit on him. If you guys open up on Cracker right now, you're going to get lit up from every single window in here, which makes sense. I can totally get that.
So but, he helped because it was something to do.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the kid, he actually plans a pretty good way of getting into Krakow's his setup.
Yeah.
But it should be mentioned here that Kirk and Spock getting these uniforms, and McCoy is the only one who doesn't get the outfit, which would have been perfect for him. It would have been great. But DeForest Kelly's Dr. McCoy is still holding a Tommy gun. Why is in his Starfleet uniform? It's kind of hilarious. He's the doctor. He's got a machine gun on somebody. Yeah, I'm going to start doing some surgery on you here after a while, pal. Just calm down. Sit down. But they get into Kirk and Spock get into these uniforms after they manage to escape for a little bit. Manage to escape. Initially, after they've been put on ice, Kirk comes up with a grand plan of like, oh, these guys are playing cards. We'll come up with something like this. And this is where Shatner starts to show in his comedic chops, I think, is one of the episodes that really plays off of that.
When he starts being a gangster.
Well, it just, as an actor.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's really playing into this comedic part of it. And he comes up with this idea. It's like, at first they talk about what they need to do to fix it. But then Kirk says, I know how we can distract these guys that are watching us so we can get back to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And so Kirk comes up with this grand idea. It's like, we're going to play a game of called Royal Fizbin. He's making it up on the fly. And he's talking to this the head guy that's kind of keeping an eye on him. I never learned what the guy's name is, but whatever. But he looks like a thug. And so they start playing this game. It's like, yeah, and, oh, look at that.
Two jacks.
Isn't that wonderful? You got a half Fizbin right now. But now, if you got yourself a jack, queen or king, that would be really bad right now. But the dealer on my left only gets one more extra card and stuff. And it's like, what are you talking about, dude?
And only on a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. At night.
At night.
That'd be a Royal Fizbin. And then Kirk is like, he's looking at me and he's like, oops. And he drops a card and I said, I'll get it. And that's where the comedy really comes into play, because these guys are playing gangsters are so, like, they're willing to imitate anything.
Yeah.
But they're willing to pick up at the same time on anything that's being given to them.
So we need to say this real quick.
Sure.
This planet and these people, if they got hold of something, they would copy it. That's what they're known for. They can go through and develop the technology, whatever.
They're incredibly imitative, I think, is the word that Spock uses. And that actually plays into it. So the way this guy's reacting actually plays into that. And so once he drops that card, he goes after it. Kirk totally punches him out. Spock pinches one other guy, and McCoy knocks out another guy. Kirk tells Bones, you and Spock, get to that radio station, call up to the Enterprise, and get out of here. I got to deal with this. And so Kirk picks up a Tommy gun and is running down the street after Spock and McCoy have managed to get Uhura on the line, and they get transported out. And so Spock and McCoy are back on board the ship. Spock runs a bunch of sociological stuff through the computers. There's nothing that on the computer that can address this particular issue.
Right, right.
So they have to figure out a different way of going about it. Kirk, on the other hand, gets picked up by Jojo Krakow's guys and gets pulled into Krakow's territory.
Right.
Okay, and he talks to him, and Kirk basically pitches the same story that was pitched to him by Bella Oxmix.
Right.
He said, no, that's not the way we're going to play it. I'm going to knock them all off. And it's like, I need a bunch of these fancy heaters. And this guy is played by Vic Tayback, the most stuff I know him from is watching the TV show Alice.
Right, right.
But this is a younger Tayback.
Oh, a lot younger.
I mean, way younger.
Doesn't even look the same.
He sounds the same.
Sounds the same. It doesn't look the same.
Alice! But I do like his secretary in that gold outfit that she's wearing.
Oh, my God.
And then you hear that music that if you could probably find a source of it, you should probably put this over the top of this right now while she's walking around. And gives Kirk that shoulder rub, like really seductive shoulder rub, even though she's got this like 38
on her hip.
On her hip. Yeah, it was awesome. And she looks like a
Oh, and she's chewing gum.
Oh yeah, that's the other
she's
part.
Chewing the gum, yeah.
Didn't she have like a mole?
Something too. Yeah,
I think she had a mole on her like left cheek or something like that. It was pretty hilarious.
So imagine like 1940s.
Actually, even earlier than that, 30s or 20s or 30s.
Well, I was thinking the movies, of when they did the gangster movies and like, you know, the ones that I always like were the bad girls chewing gum. That was exactly.
She's a bad girl. She's a bad girl.
Well, when he finds out that he goes, no, no. And then it's all of a sudden she's gone. She gets up and goes.
No, I'm not going to rub your shoulders. That was just a ploy.
And he has that look like, what?
Yeah, that ploy like, relax. We're going to put you to relax. We're going to get your shoulders, you're tense. Don't worry about it. Have a drink. So what ends up happening is Kirk manages to, I forget exactly how he, oh, that's right. So they put him on ice in this tiny little room.
Right.
But Kirk, being who he is, manages to find a bunch of copper wire in this radio and starts unwinding the spindle for the radio, and he ties it up. He sets it up so he can put the bag on a couple of these. Put a couple of bags on these guys.
Which make him a bag man.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. It would make him Kirk a bag man. It's a bad thing for these guys, because if you're a bag man, you know what's going to happen.
Yes.
You're a bag man. Anyway, so at this point, Oxmix realizes that Kirk has been taken by Krakko. He talks to Spock and McCoy, and Bones is like, you know what's going to happen. Can you trust this guy? He's like, no, there's nothing to trust. It's all about a matter of business, according to Oxmix. Yeah, well, you know, as soon as they get there, that the gangsters are going to double-cross these guys initially.
They did.
And they refer to the Federation as the Feds, which is kind of hilarious and all sorts of things. Kirk, at the same time, has managed to put the bag on these guys, does a couple little fisticuffs, knocks out a couple guys, takes another Tommy gun, and makes it back to Oxmix's office where Spock and McCoy have already been beamed down again.
Yeah.
And Kirk pulls his Tommy gun and says, all right, nobody's going to put the bag on me anymore. We're taking over. You know, he basically is just strong-arming these gangsters because that seems to be the only way that they'll respect him, which is true.
Yeah, it is true.
And it's the way that the Iotians, you know, imitate stuff. So Kirk's imitating them a little bit and playing their game. And Shatner plays it up pretty good, I will have to admit. You know, now we're taking over. Yeah. You know what I mean?
He's already in it, right?
No, he and Spock take the costumes off those two guys in the boardroom.
They're
still stuck in their long johns, which is hilarious. It's like they're freezing. It's like...
By a fire.
Right. So Kirk, hey, those are some nice threads. Get out of them. Get out of them. And then, so McCoy's left with the Tommy gun on these guys. Spock and Kirk go in a flivver, which is driven poorly, which has got one of the best lines from Spock is, Captain, you are an excellent Starfleet commander, but as a taxi driver, your driving is something to be desired.
Well, I like it because Kirk goes, he says, oh, steering wheel? Drive it? This is easy, but it's a clutch. He couldn't even know where the clutch was yet.
I'd have a problem with a clutch, but I totally get where Kirk's coming from on that one. But I love his comment. He says, I'm going to get one of these for myself. Anyway, so they make it back to Krakko's territory. That's where they run into the kid who's going to get in. And that's where the kid comes in and says, you guys planning on making a hit on Krakko? Yeah. And the kid actually plays it up really well. He's got the off-to-the-side hat. He's got that 20s, like, he's got the short pants going on and stuff like that. Hey, you want to gang up on me? Gang up on me? And he's got his little switchblade out there and he's playing with it. Yeah, it's like any kid wants to play with a switchblade.
But what gets me is as they're doing this, Kirk and Spocko are sitting in front of the car like nobody's noticing. I'm like going, okay, this is a place that has hits and everything. Come on now.
And it's backfiring all the way there.
Yeah.
Terrible. Should have let Spock run it and drive the car. That would have been better. I think Spock would have been able to figure it out.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
But so they manage to get in. They get past Krakow's guys, but they actually, you know, phaser some guys and knock them out with a, you know, stun setting. And then he said, "Oh, look, you re-arrived again." And then it's like, and Kirk's about to start to mouth off again, and then you hear this crack pulling back on a couple lashes of the Tommy guns right behind him just before it cuts to commercial. You can always tell when it's going to go to commercial because there's always this big buildup of music.
And then it's like
you hear it, and then like then it cuts to black, and then it comes back again if you're watching, like,
the
you know.
The cliffhanger.
I know, right? But it's great. And so Kirk says, "Yeah, give me a couple more of these. I won't need any guys," and stuff like that. Can you really? And Kirk actually plays it up. He's like, "Can you really trust your guys?" And then it dawns on Krakow. It's like, "Yeah, if these guys had it, they'd take me out and take over my territory."
Right.
So he takes him into the office. They have a little conversation. Two of his head guys are guarding a door. Kirk calls up to the Enterprise and tells Scotty, "Hey, I want you to hold this guy for a while, and then we're gonna go to the other territory and have some other stuff done." But initially, so Scotty beams Krakow up to the starship, to the Enterprise, and holds him in the transporter room. "I've got rights. You got nothing.
Nothing.
And if you don't behave yourself, we're gonna put you in some concrete galoshes." Is what Scotty says.
You mean cement over shoes?
James Doohan plays the comedic part actually really well with this part, which is really hilarious in so many ways. Spock and Kirk finally manage to get back to like Oxmix's place and Bones and stuff like that, and tell him. And so this is where Kirk calls back up to the Enterprise and say, "All right, hey, Scotty." And he starts trying to talk gangster talk.
Right.
And Scotty's not following anything at all. It's like, "So, Scotty, you got him on ice?" And it's like, "All right, so we're going to make some communications on the telephone from how does he say it? He's going to contact some other guys at the other end of the blower.
Yes, yes.
And look, and relocate him to this flop. What? And then under his breath, Kirk has to say, "I want you to locate other guys on the other end of the phone line and transport them to this location." Yeah. Can do. All right. So, all right. And that's when Kirk calls him. It's like, "Cover him, Spocko." And, and that's where Leonard Nimoy basically says, "I'd advise you, Zoxmix, to do what you keep dialing." And so Bella Oxmix contacts one of these other head bosses. I think his name is Temple. And Temple's like, "Yeah, I'm thinking about coming over there." And it's like, and just like, "Transport." And suddenly he materializes in Hawksmix's office, and he's looking there, and the guy says, "Mother," which is kind of hilarious because this actor actually plays, he's a really good character actor, but he always plays these like cheesy little parts.
Right.
He actually shows up in another episode that takes place in the 20s.
Oh, wow.
City on the Edge of Forever.
Oh,
he plays
yeah.
the bum who actually steals the phaser from McCoy and sets it on himself, and he dematerializes himself in the process.
Yeah.
Which was, it's like after he was drinking some milk or something like that, so McCoy's going after him. "You! What planet is this?" Cranium, he grabs his head and he takes his hat off. It's like, "Very good. Very good." This is all DeForest Kelly's talking to Dr. McCoy. He's high on drugs like nobody's business, right? Thorazine. Stay away from that shit. Bad idea. Anyway, so back to this episode. So he goes back there and Spock pulls the Tommy gun on him and takes his 45 and that is like, "Keep dialing, Oxmix."
And then Kirk goes, "Right?
Check."
Okay.
Wait, our phase.
And then later he goes, "Check?
Right." freaking hilarious. Spock can't follow anything that Kirk's saying at this particular point when he's trying to imitate any of these guys. So, as it turns out, Kirk has got all these bosses in Oxmix's office. And he's basically saying, he's like, look, all right, all right, all right. And he's walking across the top of the pool table. We're taking over. We're going to cut ourselves in for 40%. Going to leave the rest of it to you. You guys got to do with it. So there's all this talk. And then suddenly it's like, yeah, hear me out. I've only saw four of those guys up in that ship.
From JoJo?
Yeah, JoJo's talking this one. It's like, oh, man, God, these the guys won't believe anything. At the same time, what had ended up happening when Krakow had been taken, his second in command basically had gotten a hold of a bunch of his guys and they went to go take, put a hit out on Bella Oxmix's place, right? Right? So they pull up and there's this like battle between these two rival gangster guys with their Tommy guns shooting at each other. McCoy gets kind of taken over by Krakow. He takes his Tommy gun and he's like, if you say anything more or do anything, I'm going to blast them. And it's like, all right, all right, all right. Look, hey, can I talk to my ship one last time? Again, these guys are so gullible that they're willing to take on whatever comes up, right? So let me talk to the ship. And at the same time, initially Spock had already told Scotty to put one of the ship's phasers on stun.
Right.
So that's a huge area to blank out a bunch of people.
A mile or around the block?
Easily for the Enterprise from that altitude, right? You got no satellites up there. What are they going to do? I'm going to bombard you with a bunch of bad radio commercials, which is exactly what Spock pulls up when they're trying to contact the Enterprise in the first place. So what ends up happening is that Kirk tells Scotty to go ahead and set the ship's phasers on stun at that same location and set it off. It doesn't affect anybody inside the building. So what it says is that a phaser can only affect the immediate area if it's not blocked off by some sort of a building or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It affects the central nervous system of whatever it hits. But the ship's phasers hit these cars where these gangsters are shooting each other and they just drop. And it totally takes the gangsters by surprise. And that's when Kirk says, all right, this is what's going to happen. We're coming in. This is the way things are going. They might as well be dead, but we're going to let you live, but we're going to let you guys govern yourselves. And this is the way the syndicate was set up by Kirk having Oxmix being the head of the planetary government as the head boss.
And JoJo.
And JoJo Krakow being the second in command. And the rest of them, I don't want to hear any more from the rest of you. All right.
It's the Chicago gangster accent. And then there's the New York gangster accent. They're two different accents.
Totally. But But here's the hilarious part about it. This planet still has an infection. Because as the Enterprise leaves orbit, go ahead.
They cut in 40%. Well, we don't want 40%. That's a little high. And then he's like, are you arguing with me? Kind of thing. And he's like, no, it's 40%. So, yeah, they were trying to bargain.
Gotcha. Okay, so they're getting ready. They've already set up the syndicate. It's like, break out some of your drinking stuff and let's celebrate the syndicate. So I'm going to take a drink of my fine Long Island iced tea here. Anyway, so the Enterprise is shown warping out from this planet. And Mr. Spock has this forlorn look on his face. And he says, you guys are brooding. I don't recall brooding. I don't understand what you're talking about, Captain. And it's like brooding in the brooding, Mr. Spock, a somber attitude. He gives a quick definition of it. It's like, I'm neither brooding, but I am curious as how we are going or how the Federation is going to be coming back to collect their cut. And Kirk actually comes up with a fairly quick
explanation.
It's like, he's going to take the 40% of what their take is and had the Federation send representatives to the planet based upon his report, which I'm sure will be very adept because Kirk can be very diplomatic when he needs to be.
Right.
And he's going to have these guys come back and reset their part of the cut into the planetary treasury so the Iotians have to readapt their society to a more of a peaceful society, more along the lines of what a society like that should be. Now, whether or not that means that the Iotian society will be drawn into the Federation is never clear, but I would assume so because of this infection that had been initially started before the Prime Directive was put into place. They have to control this situation.
But then they look at, they go, oh, okay. They're kind of like, yeah. And then they look at Dr. McCoy.
Yeah, as Kirk says, it's like, in the words of the planet Bones, what's your beef? I don't know how to break it. It's like, just say it, doctor. And it's like, I think I left it. Left what? I think I left my communicator in Bella's office. You left your communicator in Bell's office. It contains the transstator, which is
based off all their what their
all
works
the
are.
Technology that the Federation has. This transstator is the one element that everything is based off of. And the Iotians, being the imitative race that they are, will finally be able to learn all the nuances on it. And at the end of the episode, it's like in 100 years. They'll be asking for a piece of our action. And then the music comes. Dun, 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 dun. It's like, so, here we go. That's it right there, baby. That communicator right there is the Prime Directive being broken by Leonard McCoy.
Yes.
And he's never brought up on it later on.
No.
Ever.
No.
Is that because it was left out of the reports? Starfleet captains have had a tendency over the years, decades, that sometimes the Prime Directive is, in fact, actually broken. It is a rule and a philosophy, as Jean-Luc actually said in one of the greatest episodes of Next Generation called Who Watches the Watchers?
Right.
But in the early series, there was never any repercussions for what ends up happening with the Prime Directive. They say that certain people have been able to do it. And it's like with Scotty once, Operation Annihilate, where we have the computers running all the war simulations, yet the society continues to keep advancing further on.
Right, yeah.
So Scotty comes up with a great idea that he blacks out an entire area for a section and Kirk and the rest of the crew are able to escape.
Right.
Without any damage to the rest of the populace.
Right.
It was just a blackout. But it was done really well. Actually, it wasn't an Operation Annihilate. It was like Bread and Circuses where it's the Roman world that
and it didn't break the
Prime Directive
Prime
in any
directive
way
or anything. Yeah,
and so Scotty gets accommodations for that particular act because it actually works to the crew's advantage to be right. able to break out while they can and get and escape and get away from this planet, and saying this planet is on a kind of it's an isolated area. You probably don't want to cross over, kind of like Talos IV and stuff like that. But now we're gonna get into.
Oh, one of everybody's favorite episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And the episode is...
The Trouble Tribbles. Just hit it.
They are so soothing.
Well, except for that one. It's like if you're a Klingon, you know, forget about it.
Well, it was on your side.
Yeah, well. There he goes again. Chocolate, shut up. Jesus. Take those fuzzy things away from me. Anyway, so The Trouble with Tribbles. Oh, my God. Probably one of the most hilarious episodes.
It brings in some fun characters.
Oh, definitely that.
Cyrano Jones.
Okay, so there. We'll get into that for a second, but I've got some interesting information about that particular character as it comes up. So, here is an episode where the Enterprise is suddenly getting this priority one call,
which means they got to drop everything they're doing.
everything they do, and they've got to rush to this deep space station K7. It's one of the old school space stations, not like DS9 or anything.
Well,
like
I gotta
that.
Tell you, the graphics of that on that show for that is cool.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
really good.
Well, okay, so are you looking at the remastered one, or are you talking about the original episode?
Yeah, I probably looked at the remastered one.
The remastered one is fantastic,
yeah,
actually. So Enterprise warps in, and they're expecting a battle. Now, keep in mind that the Enterprise and along of the rest of its Constitution-class starships, there are 12 of them in the fleet, are heavy cruisers. So they're designed to deal with heavy battle as well as exploration. And that's the reason why they go out on a long 5-year mission before they really come back into port or whatever.
Right.
But that being said, they warp in to the space station K7 and are looking around, and there's nowhere where there's any kind of problems. Now, they were on route to the space station anyway, really, to begin with.
Yeah.
But they were just traveling at just normal warp speed, and then they received this emergency call. So they're expecting some battle. The setup is this. You have this planet called Sherman's Planet that resides between two areas of disputed space between the Klingons and humans. Now, prior to this episode, there was an episode that deals with these beings called... I can't remember the name of the episode right off the top of my head. But it deals with these characters called the Organians that basically forced a peace between the Klingon Empire and the Federation. And that setup goes on for literally decades.
Decades.
And it crosses over into the Next Generation and so on. The Organians never are seen again later on, but it is believed that these higher beings will enforce a truce on these two systems if they find themselves at war once again. It's kind of fuzzed over a little bit in DS9 initially because there is some barriers that are set up with each other, but maybe the Organians could foresee in the future far enough. And actually, they said that you guys will become fast friends.
Right.
It's like, but initially right now, they're just...
So when they get to the space station...
They get to the space station. Sorry, I was getting off there.
The ambassador goes, I need to get these people. It was because there's Klingons on the ship. Or they were coming. No.
His Barriss's idea, played by a character actor that's been seen in numerous episodes for the late 60s and early 70s.
That was Patty Duke's father.
What?
That was Patty Duke's father.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Okay, you got me on that one. He actually stoged up in a really early B-movie called The Man from Planet X.
Yes.
Great movie. I love that flick. Though it cuts off on iTunes when I'm watching it. Bastard movie. So this guy, he plays this character named Barriss. The Kirk and Spock had transported over to see what is like. You called us on a priority one, and what gives you the right to do that? And then he says, because he's this particular high-ranking official on board this ship. And because Sherman's planet is a disputed planet because of the Organian Peace Treaty. Sorry, maybe it's the Long Island iced tea that's talking right now. Damn you, Tribbles. Why can't you guys drink instead of just eat?
You've been in the bar at the space station.
Yeah, that's the way I feel right now. Squeaky squeak. Damn freaking things. Anyway, so basically what is on board ship is a bunch of Quattro triticale, that's what they call it.
Yes.
Which grain. is a specialized grain,
right,
which Kirk looks at and says, eh, it's wheat. Now remember, Kirk's from Iowa.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's hilarious in so many ways. It's like, yeah, so what? Wheat. It's a specialized genetically altered wheat that could grow specifically on Sherman's planet.
Right.
And provide and then give credence to the fact that the Federation can use this planet better than the Klingons.
That if they can, I think that if they could end up developing it more.
Developing it.
Yeah. So with the food, that means more people, that means, you know, more colonists. So mm-hmm. it'd be, yeah.
Exactly. And then that would expand the Federation's territory versus the Empire's territory. Now, the Klingons are very industrious, so they could do it. They are, as Kirk and Spock say, or as Kirk says, they are brutal, but they could do it.
Yeah. One of the favorite part of this is like, Kirk, you will do this. I says, I'll do it. Doesn't mean I like it. He's having this problem with this one person, because the ambassador.
And the guy is saying, I want you to transport all of your security over here to guard this wheat. And Kirk says, okay, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to send over two guards. Two guards from the Enterprise to help you with guarding your grain. The thing is that Barris believes that there's a Klingon agent of some kind that is infiltrating to the disputing planet.
To disrupt it, and so it
would fall into Klingon hands, right, and so on like that. We're introduced to a couple different characters. You got Barris, this ambassador or high commissioner or whatever, and then you got his aide, Arnson Darvin, I think.
It is Darvin. And then...
Well, then you got the Klingons.
Right. And there's still one more, but that we'll get to that.
Okay. So Kirk says, okay, so I'm going to send you two guards. I will head back over to the Enterprise. We're going to set up a shore leave for the Enterprise. And as soon as that happens, people from the Enterprise start showing up.
This is at like equal amounts of Klingons versus his crew.
Well, the Klingons haven't even shown up yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So what ends up happening is that the Enterprise has these guys start doing shore leave. And so Uhura and Chekov go into this. And this is where we're introduced to Cyrano Jones. Oh, okay. So now, keep in mind, now we've already been introduced to one con man in Star Trek, Harry Mudd.
Okay? Yeah.
Harry Mudd showed up in two episodes, Mudd's Women and Mudd's Passion or something like that. So Harry Mudd he's an intergalactic con man. You know, he's trying to burst everything else. Cyrano Jones was supposed to be Harry Mudd initially, but they couldn't get the actor
to come and do it.
Carmel, I think is his last name, to come in and play the character again.
Right.
He was involved with something else at the time.
Right.
So they invented another character called Cyrano Jones and had this other character actor come in and play the part.
Which is, he was a scout.
Yeah, a mining prospector.
Right, but they called him a scout too because he would come back and tell him what's happening and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So he would trade and do things, you know, on his
making
trips.
A meager living, as Spock puts it, in his one-man spaceship and traveling and doing commerce, including our favorite little guys, the Tribbles. And so at this bar, a Tribble is produced by Cyrano Jones out of his pocket. So it's this tiny little white ball of fuzz.
For a drink.
And he's like actually saying, I will sell this to you for credits. And Cyrano Jones, I don't think he realized that if you fed a Tribble, that it would produce the way it does. As it turns out, we'll find out about how fast these Tribbles repopulate, according to Dr. McCoy and Mr. Spock. But what ends up happening is that Uhura wants this white little tiny little Tribble, and you hear the purring and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, of course, Chekov says, does it bite? It doesn't have any teeth. So we don't know exactly how it eats, but, man, they eat like crazy, right? Chekov has a little bit of this, a couple of these bits of rice or triticale out on the bar, and the Tribble moves over and starts chewing on it,
eating it.
You know, and this is one of those episodes that we should realize is that this is one of those other episodes that has a different type of music score that's being added to it.
Yeah, it did. Yeah,
it's got that. I don't know how to describe it. It sounds like if a cat had some music to it, that's what it would sound like.
A cat had music.
You know what I mean? It's got that kind of that, like, I'm so cute, and that mewing sound that goes along with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Tribbles, yeah.
That's what it sounds like. And it's like and the purring sound. But, so Uhura has taken this tribble back after it has already
onto the ship,
back over to the Enterprise, and it's already starting to multiply. And she has like a litter of these different things in a rec room as Spock and Kirk come into the thing. It's like, what are you setting up, a nursery? Says, I didn't know that it was he was a she and had a bunch of babies. This is where Dr. McCoy comes in.
I love this.
It's like, do you mind if I take it and find out how this thing ticks? It's like, if you're going to dissect it, I want to hear about it. It's like, I won't touch a hair on its head.
Where the head is.
if it has one. Head. McCoy's doing his study on the tribbles. But at the same time, at this point, that's when the Klingons show up.
Right. The Klingons show up.
Yeah. And they're already on... Kirk goes immediately into high alert when anytime the Klingons are around, and immediately it's this character by the name of Koloth, Captain Koloth, aboard the D7, and they show up on board their ship that's circling around. So it's got both the Enterprise and this Klingon ship, D7, just kind of traveling around the outside of the space station. In the digital version, the remastered version looks really cool, actually. Yeah. And it's like,
so what's interesting is when they meet this that Klingon captain, right? And then he stands up, and you look at his, I guess it'd be his second.
Yeah.
He's shorter than the captain. He's kind of short.
The second in command. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you go into the bar, we'll get to that part. He's not. That's because everybody else is the same height.
It should also be mentioned that John Kolos, who played the character of Commander Kor in the Organian episode, was supposed to be in that episode, but they had to invent a new character named Koloth, which is played by a previous actor that had been on board are been on the show as Trelane. You'll recognize the actor.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
William Campbell is his name. Not to be confused with Bruce Campbell, though that'd be hilarious. Can you see Bruce Campbell as a Klingon?
He just didn't have the chin.
Oh my God. Bruce Campbell as a Klingon. It's like, yeah, I got my,
my boomstick.
I got my Batleth right here. Shop smart. Smart. Kmart. Not S-Mart. Kmart.
Oh, and we got to mention, the Klingons at this point are not the Klingons we see later.
No.
Totally different.
Now, this is...
They almost look like a Romulan.
Okay, so here's the story about the Klingons, okay? Klingons initially were basically... I'm not going to say black-faced... But it's kind of close to blackface with Manchu type mustaches and so on like that initially, right? They were initially set up as the Nazis, quote unquote, according to some of the old school Star Trek Bible kind of things and stuff like that. Because they're very, very brutalistic and so on like that. But they were humanoid. But the reason they look that way is because that's as far as the makeup was able to be put out there.
During that time, okay.
So when the motion picture came out, they totally changed the look up of the Klingons. Now the backstory of that goes, and I've read about this since I was a kid, is that there was a genetic mishap where the Klingons were trying to genetically engineer themselves at some point, and that's the reason why there's a division between the human-looking Klingons and the what they call the Imperial Klingons, the one with the head ridges and stuff like that. DS9 comes around and says, they try to address the issue. It's like, those are Klingons? We don't like to talk about it. Years later, a later iteration of Star Trek, Enterprise, explains that whole old text back from the 1970s and early 80s, saying that there was a division because there was a genetic mishap where... The Klingons had captured a couple of Earth augments. These augments, like Khan, were being experimented upon, and they tried to incorporate some of the genetic markers of the augments into the Klingon race. And then what ended up happening is that those augments and their genetic things overrode any of the natural Klingon DNA.
So it totally changed their DNA.
Their visage
for
literally about 100 years.
It's always 100 years.
100-year mark is always a good gap, but it fits in really well with the reason why the Klingons look they do, because of a mishap in the amount of money that was being able to spend on makeup at the time.
Right. Yeah.
It's a back-ended way of doing it. I still think it makes a lot of sense. If you were to watch all the episodes of Star Trek from Enterprise forward, it would make a lot more sense. It's like, and then, but because of the way this was all written at the time, it's what it is. So anyway, you have these human-looking Klingons. You got Captain Koloth, who was supposed to be played by John Colios as Kor, but they couldn't get him. He was doing another villainous thing on probably like a Man from U.N.C.L.E. or something like that at the time. I mean, he plays villains really well. If you take a look at the way he plays Kor initially in the original Star Trek, the way that he plays Baltar in the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Okay. Again, he portrays that villainous, conniving individual really, really well. There's always a menace when you look at him.
Yeah. He just has that look like... Mm.
Yeah. But he himself was one of those Klingons that were affected by that augment thing, because John Colos reprises that character of Kor in DS9.
Yeah.
Done really, really well.
Yeah.
It's a good episode, but back to Tribbles.
So, did they say it was equal? Security?
Klingons were going to come over and have their version of shore leave along with the Federation on board K-7 because the Klingons wanted a break. Now, they didn't have holodecks or anything like that on board this space station.
And then the ambassador got involved.
Well, he does, but they're supposed to offer the same... how do you say it when you want to have...
Accommodations.
Equal accommodations for the Klingons as well as the Federation who are on board the space station. So the only place they're going to be able to have any kind of equal equilibrium between the two of them is to hang out in a bar. Enemies that hang out in a bar and there's alcohol. No Ractogino.
Okay, this is not your Star Wars bar.
This is not a regular bar. You have two factions on either side. But, of course, the Klingons, being what they are, start mouthing off.
Because Scotty, Chekhov, and I don't know who the other guy is. One more guy.
I think his guy name is Harriman, I believe.
Yeah, and he's the interest.
He was a kind of side character in a lot of the episodes.
Right.
But he has a couple speaking parts in the episode.
Yeah.
It should be mentioned that there's shore leave. Kirk has put Scotty in charge of the shore leave crew to make sure that there's no problems.
Well, first of all, then he goes, before he says, yeah, you're in charge of it. And he goes, oh, Captain, I don't want to go. I'm reading my
technical manual.
Technical manual, journals. He goes, really? He says, no, do I need to order you to go? What? I'm ordering you to go. To go have fun. Damn it, and you're going to.
Yeah, so Scotty goes in there with Chekhov and this guy named Harriman. Actually, which is kind of funny, because if that's actually the character's name, there's another Harriman that shows up later in the series in one of the movies.
Oh, yeah. There's probably character building.
There's a lot of character building. The character named Stiles shows up a lot in Star Trek, and he's always got a chip on his shoulder because of the Romulans in some cases. Initially, from the Balance of Terror, there was a Stiles that was just aggravating in the Next Generation as one of the engineers.
Yeah.
And he was fighting against Geordi LaForge to gain control of the chief engineer spot. That being said, whatever. But I'm sure. And then there was the other Captain Stiles that was on board the Excelsior when Kirk and those guys steal the Enterprise. NCC-1701, no bloody A, no bloody B, no bloody C, no bloody D, and the rest of the iterations down the line.
Anyway,
as we regress to that, let's go back.
We're constantly going back in time here.
I'm the leash.
He has to rein me in because I've got all this knowledge and how everything relates to each other. So both crews of the Klingons and the Federation are sitting in this bar. Cyrano Jones comes in, and this is the first clue that this comedic character has something to do with it. That's the reason why the Tribbles react in such a way to the Klingons. That there's a big division between us. So, like, Tribbles usually like everybody. They like Vulcans. They like humans. They even like Barriss, which is kind of hilarious. No accounting for taste, as Kirk says to him later on. But Tribbles like pretty much everybody except Klingons.
Right.
Should be mentioned here that that actually is a very turning point that will come to be pertinent later on. So the Klingons start mouthing off. They've had a couple of drinks. Maybe they're drinking blood wine or some shit like that. I don't know. So they're drinking in there, and the second in command starts taunting the crew.
Yeah. Now, Scotty, Chekhov, and this other guy. Yeah.
And so they're sitting at the table, and the guy's mouthing off about Kirk, comparing him to a Denevian slime devil and with a
delusions of God.
Well, he said, what is it? A tin-plated dictator. With the illusions of godhood. But he's not soft.
And then Chekhov, or Scotty goes, this is, that's enough, boy. No. We can take that.
Sit down, mister. We can take a few insults.
But Scotty!
Captain.
That's
you're channeling your Scotsman instead of the Russian.
You heard what they said about the captain.
See, you got me doing it.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's okay. He's entitled to his own opinion. We can take it.
Then the Klingon comes over right next to Scotty.
Right. And then he starts mouthing off about the Enterprise. And he says it in such a way, and the camera zooms in on the Klingon's face. The Enterprise. I should rephrase.
I should.
And he actually copies Scotty's way of talking a little bit. That's right, I should. And he puts his drink down and said, I didn't mean to say that the Enterprise is a garbage cow. It should be hauled away as
garbage.
Now, Scotty takes a lot of pride in the ship, particularly the Enterprise, right?
I said, do you want to say that?
You want to rephrase that one more time, laddie?
Yeah, there you go.
And he says it, and he starts laughing, and Scotty gets up and totally just backhands him. And then the fight
begins.
And you have...
That's a good fight scene, by the way.
It's actually really good. Pretty good. Scotty takes a couple licks from a few people, but he's dishing it out business, right?
He's an angry Scotsman.
Yeah, but watching Chekhov try to go against that large
Big guy. He hits him like three times then looks at him like, oh.
Yeah, and gets thrown. At the same time, Cyrano Jones has been in this bar, which is the comedic part about it. So he's going behind the bar.
Because the bartender took off to get security.
Instead of having a button underneath the thing, who would think that you're going to have a bar brawl in a space station, right? You should talk to Quark about that or something, right? Anyway, so takes off. Cyrano Jones comes back behind the bar, gets himself a fair amount of drinks and so on like that. And he's walking out of the bar with these two drinks in the melee that's going on between these characters. And then suddenly security shows up and Cyrano Jones has the last parting drink as the guys come back in. Now, on board the Enterprise, there's been an incident, Kirk says, and this is part of the official record. There's been an incident between the Klingons and the Federation, so they've been pulled back from their shore leave. And Kirk is interrogating all these guys in one of the rooms. And Scotty's the last person that leaves the bar. And Kirk says, so what started the fight, Scotty? They were insulting you, Captain. It's like, and Chekhov wanted to throw the first punch, but I held him back. It's like, you held him back. So what was it?
Oh, no, he said, did you throw the first punch then? Did you throw the punch then at that time?
Is this off the record? No, this is not off the record. I did, sir. Scotty. What did they say? They called the Enterprise a garbage scow, Captain. Sir. And it's like, and that's when you hit the Klingons.
Aye.
All right. Your privileges have been revoked. You're stuck to your cabin. And that's
when he walks out. He goes,
I can read all those technical manuals. He's like super stoked about it. So it's not even a problem for Scotty. He's all
like happy.
At this point, Kirk and Spock are going to the mess hall. And at this point, there are tribbles everywhere.
And this is on the Enterprise.
On the Enterprise.
They've gotten through the whole system. They got into the food production.
Replicators. And they got in through the air ducts. And then it dawns on Kirk. Okay, I'm going to make a cut right here. So it should be mentioned that Spock and McCoy have actually gone through and actually taken a look at how fast these tribbles are multiplying aboard the Enterprise. And Spock gives Kirk a rundown of how fast these tribbles have been there. They've been there for 3 days. There's so many of these. There's a million some of these tribbles because they're multiplying every right. Of the things. McCoy has found that literally almost 90% of the tribbles' metabolism is set for reproduction. Kirk has gone to sickbay to get an aspirin because of both Barris and this whole Klingon thing in the wheat. And McCoy gives him the aspirin and stuff like that. Basically, Kirk's saying, Bowen says, do you know what you get when you feed a tribble? And Kirk says, just off the cuff, is like, get a fat tribble. No. You get a whole bunch of little tribbles, little hungry tribbles. And he tells him about the multiplication thing.
Right.
So McCoy and Spock are having this little banter back and forth. It's like, it is the common thing for humanoids to love soft, fuzzy, little furry things. And there is one thing I do know, Mr. Spock. And he says, what is that, Dr. McCoy? He's like, I like them more than I like you. There is one redeeming thing. They do not talk too much. I mean,
that's what Spock says, yes.
And this is one of those things that the writers picked up on, is the banter that takes place between McCoy and Spock.
It's always good. That banter's, I mean, through
they
the whole show.
They picked up on it and they ran with it really well.
It's really good.
They actually used it. Actually, Simon Pegg used it really well between McCoy and Spock in the last movie, the Beyond movie.
Yeah.
Which was really good. I like that movie. It's not what I would call Star Trek canon by any stretch of the means, but it was an enjoyable movie because it's an alternate version of these characters. If they would just come out and say that, which they've kind of did recently.
They kind of did. Yeah.
But we'll get into that a little bit later.
So
Scotty comes in with all these tribbles, and he's already told Uhura to get all these tribbles off the ship. But he realizes that, and Scotty comes on board the bridge with all this handful of tribbles in his hands. Like, yeah, they're into the system too.
They're in the engineering.
And Spock makes the comments like, there's air ducts like this over at K7. And it dawns on Kirk, oh my God, if the tribbles start eating this stuff, there's going to be a shit ton of these tribbles. Might as well start wearing tribble coats and stuff like that, I guess, or something like that. They'd just be weird. They'd be purring and, like, you know. But they get back over and they let Barris know that there's a problem, so they go to one of the grain ducts.
Right.
And they open it up. Well, they try to open it up.
It doesn't work. And then he does the overhead one.
Does the overhead one. And as soon as Kirk opens it up, there's just this torrent of tribbles landing all around the top of
it. That's basically, 4 feet of tribbles?
There's more than that, actually. Yeah. But they had to get a barrel to hold the tribbles in place so it would hold it. So
there's just more story about that. Yeah. So as you watch it, you see the guys are up there, and they're kind of laughing that are throwing tribbles up because they're throwing him down.
And they're trying to beat him in the head.
They're trying to beat him in the head as he's talking.
And he actually looks over his head like, I'm going to get you, you bastard. Which is kind of hilarious. But they did a great job of that. And of course, Barris is there and he says, I'm going to hold you personally responsible because you bungled this whole thing. It's like, Mr. Barris, if you don't shut up, I'm going to put you in shackles. in irons, is, I think is what he says. Yeah. And then McCoy comes out, I found it. If you stop feeding them, they'll stop multiplying. It's like, now he tells me. Good job, Boone. Figure out what's going on, because Spock realizes as he picks up one of the triples, it's no longer Purdy.
Captain, it's dead.
There are a lot of them alive, a lot of them dead. Something's in the wheat that's killing them. And Bones is tasked with finding out what that is.
Right.
And he finds out what it is eventually. He said the grain's been poisoned. But how? They think initially, Barrison, the guy, thinks it's that Cyrano Jones. It's like, right. That's not
of course.
But as they all meet each other, including the Klingon captain, it's like, can you get those out of there? It's like, I thought you said they liked everybody. Well, who was in the bar? Klingons.
And then he walks towards the captain, the Klingon captain. And he goes...
Yeah.
And then he pops up in his hand. You can tell because it curls up.
Yeah.
And so he's doing it with his hand. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. But the Tribble freaks out and at the sight of the Klingons. And he said, just get rid of those. And it's like, yeah, you can leave. But as the Tribbles are being taken by the security guards out of it, Darwin walks through the door and it flips out.
Yeah.
And it starts screaming at it like it does a Klingon. Aha. So the circle plot comes back around. And Cyrano Jones is there, and he said, I thought you said that these liked everybody. Yeah, but they don't. And it's like, well, who else was in the bar? Klingons. That's the way they react. And it's like, So it dawns on Kirk. Aha. So the agent, this secret agent that Barriss was talking about is actually Barriss's freaking aide,
yeah.
Darwin.
Bones comes in.
Yeah.
And then does his little...
He's like, this man's a Klingon. That's the reason why. So, yeah, superficially, it's already been proven, or at least in Star Trek lore, that people, whether you be a Klingon made to look like a human or a human that's made to look like a Romulan.
Right.
As we saw in the Enterprise incident with... Kirk looking like a Romulan with the bobbed ears and all that stuff, that which was kind of cool looking, actually. He actually played a convincing Romulan. I can see that.
Spock goes, I think you look...
Don't look aesthetically pleasing on a commander, sir.
But he also said something about it looks good or something like that. I think he said that to Bones, of course.
Yeah, but Bones says, unless you want to go through the rest of your life looking like your first officer. God, so Bones, what a backhanded comment there.
So they get the guy, Klingon is found out.
Yeah, they found that the guy had poisoned all the Quadro Triticale, so the Klingons would have been able to actually gain control of that planet in the process.
So what McCoy found out is that the more they ate, that what happened is that they had to eat more, but it was never enough.
The more they would never be able to eat enough to make them survive. There was a toxin that would build up in their system that would actually cause them to die.
Right,
and that makes a lot of sense. So probably the populace would probably eat so much of this grain that it would cause a toxin to build up in their system, and they would just basically starve to death.
Yeah,
and that's probably what would have happened. By the end of the episode, there was an apology that the Klingons wanted, which wasn't going to happen because of the situation, because they found out that it was a Klingon agent that was trying to kind of booby-trap the...
Because of the fight, yeah.
Yeah, and the Trodro Triticale and all that kind of stuff. So, it shows the Klingons can be pretty conniving when they want to be, but nope, not this time. And as the Enterprise begins to take off and Darwin's been dealt with, Cyrano Jones is dealt with by having to clean up every single Tribble that's on board the space station.
Really? Really? Really,
yeah,
Captain?
It'll take you 17 years to pick up every single
one of these. Or 20 years for...
In a penal colony.
Penal colony.
17 years. Think of it as job security, as Kirk says. Now, the thing is, if a lot of these Tribbles have gorged themselves on the poisoned Trodro Triticale, not a problem. You're not going to be running into that problem, but you're going to be picking up Tribbles like crazy.
So where's he going to put them at?
Yeah, I don't know.
Feed him more grain.
Well, I don't... Yeah, if they're dead, what do you do with them?
Yeah.
Get pillows out of them.
Slippers.
Trench coat.
Fur hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Muffs.
Ear muffs. Tribble Muffs. It's a softer trilling sound in your ear while you sleep. But it should be mentioned that I think it's for the 40th year anniversary or the 50th year. I can't remember which, but no, it's for the 40th. For the 40th year anniversary, DS9, Deep Space Nine, did Trials and Tribulations is an episode. So what they did is they
Tribulation. You get it? Tribulation, yes.
Yeah. They took the episode, the remastered stuff, and the crew of the Defiant had picked up this character that had been on this planet that the Cardassians held just at the beginning of the Dominion War.
Was that Chloe or Kardashian?
I don't even talk about those guys. They have their own series. They can talk about how they're going to break the internet.
They kind of look like
lizard people.
Romulans.
Oh, no. Hell no. Screw that. That's terrible. I mean, the Star Empire would like, no, we're going to shoot those guys off into the sun. So Trials and Tribulations is a 50th anniversary, our 40th anniversary callback to the original series.
Right.
They take the remastered stuff that they have done recently with Trek, which looks really good because it matches up with everything else that's come after the original series.
Right.
The episode more or less seamlessly puts the DS crew in the background of the original episode pieces that they air.
Which is pretty cool.
Actually really good. And this is where we get that crossover that talks about how Darvin, should be mentioned that the original actor that played that character shows back up again. Charlie Brill shows back up again, not playing the same character, Darvin, supposedly a century later, because he'd been caught behind Cardassian lines. And the DS crew, DS9 crew on board the Defiant, is taking a orb of time back to Bajor. And so what ends up happening is that Darvin has heard about this, uses it, travels back in time on board the Defiant, back to the time when he was a younger agent, to kill Kirk because of this insane setup that he had and because of these effing tribbles. Right, he had this statue that he tells Worf later on in the episode. Like, I'm gonna have a statuary. Don't you think that on Klingon we have all these statues that just look so austere? And then I'm gonna have a picture of Kirk's head in one hand and a tribble in the other.
Well, let's get back to the end of the show.
Of which
tribble?
Which episode are we talking about?
The
are we
one,
talking to DS9 or are we talking
no,
about...
No, not the DS9 one. No, we're going to get back to the one we're talking through this whole thing.
Oh, okay. So, it should be said that... So, Darvin's been caught and he's being processed and Kirk and the rest of the guys have come back to the Enterprise and they're getting ready to warp out and Kirk comes on board the bridge and looks around him, sees there's no more tribbles. And it's like, what happened to the tribbles? Well, and it kind of goes back and forth between Dr. McCoy
and Spock.
And then Scotty.
It was Scotty's idea.
But really, it was Mr. Scott. And he's like, Mr. Scott.
Aye.
Where are the tribbles?
Well, we transported, Captain.
Transported. Where? Scotty, you didn't transport him into space, did you? Well, that'd be inhumane,
no.
Captain.
No,
I gave him a very good home. Where? I gave him to the Klingons.
Oh, you we both.
You what?
Yes, it was no... It was no tribble at all.
He transported all the tribbles into the Klingons' engine room, where there was no tribble at all.
It is one of everything that people, when they see watch this one, this is one of their favorites.
It's one of the ones that most people know. They always talk about the Tribble episode a lot of the time. But the DS9 episode follows up very well with that because it seamlessly has a time travel story in it, which actually has some hilarious aspects about that. The Time Travel Authority, I think is what they call it or something like that. And it's like, Kirk, he's a menace.
I wonder if they're close to the TVA.
Could be. Could be. It actually would probably be pretty akin to that, actually.
Yes.
I'm sure that's what the TVA was actually based on. Because this episode takes place long before the TVA even came around.
Yeah.
But there are similarities between it. But I'm thinking, but DS9 actually did a really good play on it. However, in the canon of Star Trek, the triples had been wiped out in the 23rd century. What ends up showing up at the very end of that episode on DS9? Tribbles everywhere. So they had taken an ecological menace, the tribbles,
right,
and brought them back from extinction. It's not like the whales, man. It's not like the whales. It's with tribbles. It's like if this was like part goat and part cat, that might work because, you know, goats will eat anything. And if you mix that with a cat that purrs, perfect. Except it doesn't have horns on it or something.
All right, Captain. It is trouble is a tribble.
Oh my god. I'm trying to picture Scotty saying that right now. But anyway, so that's the end of the episode as far as the episode goes, and it's a good laugh between all the characters and so on like that. And then that's the end of the episode.
So this is the end of the show. I'm Paul.
And I'm Alan.
And this is Comedy Potpourri. And we'll catch you on our next episode.